Tonight's reading is taken from Luke chapter 16. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What's this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be my manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm too ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do that so when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'Much do you owe my master?' 900 gallons of olive oil,' he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 450. Then he asked the second, 'And how much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat,' he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves so that when it is gone you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So, if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, he will give you property of your own. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight."
There's a great deal of teaching in that passage. Some of it are very familiar to us, where Jesus said, "You cannot serve two masters." And then, as if to make it clear to them what he's talking about and what the main point of that comment is, he said, "You cannot serve both God and money," lest there was any doubt in their minds or confusion. I have subtitled our thinking tonight, "Who Wants to be a Millionaire?" So let me ask a question. If I gave you a check for £1 million tonight, what would you do with it? If you are wise, the first thing you would do is to see if it was made out of the Bank of Toyland, because I don't have £1 million to give you. But what would you spend it on, £1 million? Well, let's have a show of hands. What would you spend £1 million on? I work here, yes, okay.
Sightsavers.
Sorry?
Sightsavers.
Sightsavers. Oh, very good, yes. Worthy thing to do, yeah. Give money to charity. In the 1990s, the early 1990s, I was a minister up in Port Rush and Port Stewart, but also the university chaplain in Coleraine. And it was a great privilege to have a chaplaincy group, and usually during the early part of the term I would address the subject of money, because many students, of course, in those days, in the 90s, they got their grant at the beginning of the year. They were 19, they'd never had such a huge amount of money in one check, and there were lots and lots of people, sadly, who wanted to take their money from them. The first week of term, maybe the first fortnight of term, there were huge publicity around offers. All the local pubs and off licenses would have had a 2-for-1 or 3-for-1 offer, and money could just very easily disappear. And it was important, therefore, I felt, to address the subject of money. But then I would say to them something along the lines of, what would you do with £1 million? And of course, to a 19-year-old student, even in 1990, £1 million sounded a lot of money. And I would say, you know, £1 million is not a huge amount of money nowadays. And they would look at me as if I had three heads. And I would say, because if you had £1 million, the first thing you would do is share it with your family, I presume. And your family quite probably would think about changing the car, yes, but maybe changing the house. Now, what sort of house can you buy, let's say, for £500,000? Much bigger house than the houses you and I live in, yes. But if you did that, you probably would employ somebody to cut your grass for you, look after the garden. You would employ somebody to help you clean the house. That would be a financial commitment. You change the car, you take the whole family on a big holiday. Before you know it, you've committed three-quarters of that £1 million. In other words, if you had £1 million, you would buy into the lifestyle that £1 million would bring you. And you would discover that maybe it wasn't such a huge amount of money after all. It all depends, you see, on priorities. Priorities. And we live in a world, sadly, where there is lots of dishonesty. Lots of people who would want to take your money, whether it's £1 million or £100, from you and me. And I think this parable is very appropriate for today because it's appropriate for every day. So much of modern business is dishonest. It's about cheating employers or employees. It's about kickbacks. It's about inducements. It's about price fixing. It's about cartels. It's about gazumping. If you've bought a house in recent times, you will know that the price that you agree is not necessarily the price that you end up paying. We have the RHI heating scam. We have cybersecurity. I had a phone call the week before last from somebody thanking me for the £600 that I had donated to their cause from my credit card account, and I didn't hear the rest of it, so I put the phone down. Then I checked with the bank that nobody had taken £600 out of my credit card account. That's the sort of world in which we live, not just in modern business, but always in business. Always in business there has been dishonesty, kickbacks, price fixing, gazumping, dishonesty. And we see here that Jesus is telling this particular story that Catherine read for us to his disciples. But the Pharisees are also listening. Verse 14 reminds us that they also are listening. The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this, and they were sneering at Jesus. And he said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight." He's telling this story to his disciples, but the Pharisees were listening also. So what did Jesus really want to teach in this parable? I think there are two overriding things. The first is that we should use opportunities that God gives to us wisely. And the second is that we should beware of covetousness. We live in a world where people covet what other people have, and they take it sometimes. Beware of covetousness. Jesus is saying believers should learn from business, but act righteously in order to accomplish more for God's kingdom. This steward was in trouble. He was in trouble because his boss was auditing the books, and he would certainly get the sack, so he wisely did what he could and prepared for the future. It has been said that a crisis may not make a man, but it will show what a man is made of, or a woman. A crisis may not make a man, but it will show what a man is made of. And Jesus did not commend his unethical activity, but he did commend him for his wise use of opportunities. He says in verse 8, The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. Sometimes as Christians, as people of the light, we can be a bit naive as to how difficult and how unethical and how sinful the world can be. Jesus did not commend his unethical activity, but he did commend him for his wise use of opportunities. Children of today are in their time, verse 8 is translated, wiser than children of light. In their time is an important phrase. They are unwise in spiritual things, unwise in eternal things, people of the world. But in their time, in their material interests, they can often see more clearly than maybe we can. So what did this shrewd manager see in this parable? Well, the first thing I think is he saw himself. He saw himself. We often go through situations in life and often we don't see ourselves. This man suddenly realized in the crisis that he was a steward. He wasn't a wealthy man. He was a steward. He owning nothing himself, he simply managed his master's possessions. It wasn't his money. He was the steward. He was not a millionaire himself. He handled the millionaire's money. What does that say to us? It can say to us that we may possess many things. We may possess many things, but we own very little. God owns what we have. And you've heard it said, and I have said it at funerals, that we can take nothing from this life. God owns the world. We may possess many things, but we own very little. God gives us the privilege of managing his vast wealth, of using his vast wealth, of enjoying his vast wealth. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17 says this: command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Paul, an older apostle, writing to Timothy, a young man, young in faith, giving him advice. God gives us the privilege of managing, using, enjoying his vast wealth. We are stewards of time, for example. Ephesians 5, verses 15 and 16 say this: be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. We are stewards of time. It's wrong for us to waste time, just like it is to waste money or to waste food. If the doctor said to you or to me, you have 6 months to live, our use of time would probably change. We are stewards of time. Our priorities would change. John Wesley was once asked, if Christ were to come back tomorrow night, what would you do tomorrow? And John Wesley said, tomorrow I would rise at 4:30, as I always do. I would pray for an hour, as I always do. I would read the scriptures for an hour, as I always do. And he plotted his day, and it was just what he always did. He was prepared for the return of the Lord, whenever it was going to be. And he believed that as a steward of time, of God's time, he needed to use the day effectively for God. We are stewards of time. We are also stewards of gifts and abilities. 1 Peter 4 and verse 10 says this: each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. God wants us to use gifts and abilities to build up his church. Do you and I say, Lord, I will do anything for you if you help me to do it? Do we say that? And if we do, do we mean it? I will do anything for you. Covenant service, put me to doing, etc. Faith is about availability. It's not just about ability. So we are stewards of time, we are stewards of gifts and abilities, we are stewards of the gospel. Again, in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 13, we read, what you have heard from me, keep as the pattern of sound teaching, Paul says to Timothy. With faith and love in Christ Jesus, guard the good deposit that was entrusted to you. Guard it with the help of the Holy Spirit who lives in us. We are stewards of the gospel. We are to guard the message and share it with others. God has put the greatest treasure in our hands, the most fantastic treasure in our hands. We are to guard it and share it at the same time. Stewardship involves not just our use of money, but everything we possess. It involves stewardship of everything we possess. Our car, our tools, our books, our house, our clothes, our children. Stewardship means giving 10% to the Lord. No. Stewardship means giving 50% to the Lord. No, stewardship means giving 100% to the Lord and asking him what he wants us to do with it. So this shrewd manager sees himself. But he also sees life. This parable was given by Jesus just after the famous parable of the prodigal or wasteful son in Luke chapter 15. We see three different characters, therefore, side by side. We see the prodigal, the wasteful son. We see the elder brother. And then we see the steward in this particular parable. Three different characters, three different philosophies of life. The prodigal wasted life. He went into the far country and wasted his money. Chapter 15 of Luke, verse 13. He lived for the moment with no thought for the future. Now, there are many people, young and older, who do that today. I'm sure you will know that there are young people, maybe in your family, maybe you know them, and even as they get older and into their 20s or 30s, they don't really think about pension or any provision for the future. Maybe because they feel they can't afford it. They don't have enough money. Many people live in a culture of binge drinking or smoking incessantly or maybe eating too much without any self-control. Living for the moment with no thought for the future. That was the prodigal. That was the one who wasted his life. The older brother in that same lesson spent his life. He was a dull person. He was a drudge. He obeyed his father without any joy. He hoped the future might be better. And in this parable, in the next chapter, the steward is brought into that little trio because the steward didn't waste his life, didn't spend his life. He invested his life. He didn't destroy his future by living in the present like the prodigal. He didn't destroy his present by hoping for the future like the elder brother. He lived the present in the light of the future. He used present opportunities to secure for himself an assured future. Now let me say again what I've said before, that Jesus did not approve of the way that he did it, but he commended the fact that he did it. Treasure is not something which is condemned in the scriptures, but treasure is something which should be something that we build for the future. Not in terms of money, but in terms of what we invest for eternity. Jesus did not approve of the way he did it, but he commended the fact that he did it. He saw his life was a lie, the steward. He called his master, Master. But in reality, money was his master. And that's why Jesus gives us that very important lesson. You cannot serve both God and money. You cannot have two masters in your life. And he makes it specific. You cannot serve both God and money. He's speaking not just to this rich man's story. He's speaking to those who are listening to him, the disciples, the Pharisees. Now, we could not live in this world without money. It's an essential tool. It's a lubricant for our society. We couldn't live without money unless we lived on a desert island with food and shelter available to us. Money is a marvelous servant, but it's a terrible master. A marvelous servant, but a terrible master. The person who has £1 million wants £10 million. The person who has £10 million wants £100 million. And Paul said, money is the root of all kinds of evil, 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. No, he said, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. The steward was living for the wrong master. And he was living for the wrong motive. He was trying to please himself, not his master. He was robbing his master, but he was also robbing himself. Life is a series of opportunities to serve God and to do his will. Is anything else worth living for? Let me say it again. Life is a series of opportunities to serve God and do his will. Is anything else worth living for? So in this parable, Jesus is wanting to teach that we use opportunities wisely, and that we beware of covetousness. If you knew that tomorrow was to be the last day of your life, what rearranging would you do tonight? Let's say a prayer together. Loving Father, for your many gifts to us, we give you thanks. We thank you that we do have material possessions to make our life more comfortable. We thank you that you provide for us for our needs and sometimes for our wants as well. We thank you that we don't struggle like many, many, many people in our world to live even until tomorrow. But give us a sense of your priorities in life, for the gifts that you've given to us and how to use them. Teach us how you want us to live, not just merely exist in a joyful or pleasurable existence. And help us every day to seek to follow Jesus, who gives us everything that is worthwhile. We ask our prayer in his name.